It's an assault on America, and that's why I'm very proud to be here.
Yes, we know. You would hate to miss an assault on America. It's what you live for, after all.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, so the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com, and we hope you agree. Thank you for joining us. Since we last spoke to you on this program, there has, as usual, been quite a bit of news. The Biden administration has announced yet another $7.4 billion in student loan cancellations, bringing its total of such debt relief to borrowers to more than $150 billion to date. GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson flew down to Mar-a-Lago to try and win the support of the disgraced former president after Trump fangirl Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene has called for his ouster as speaker. Johnson appeared with Trump, offering remarks calling for proof of citizenship for voters, despite the fact that it is already a violation of federal law for non-citizens to vote, and there is no evidence of more than a handful of people ever having done so amid decades of records of such crimes. The Biden administration is finally raising the fees that oil and gas companies must pay to drill on public land for the first time in more than 100 years. That's good news, Desi Doyen,
oh,
it seems to me.
It definitely is.
And on Saturday, Iran launched some 300 drones and missiles directly at Israel in response to Israel's bombing of an Iranian consulate in Syria that killed two Iranian generals last week. The aerial bombardment was said to have been all but completely blocked by defensive missiles launched by Israel, the U.S., and both European and Arab allies. The attack has broadened concerns, however, of a regional expansion of Israel's war in Gaza right now, which has reportedly killed more than 30,000 so far. That in response to the deadly attack last October by Hamas against Israel, which reportedly killed around 1,200. Iran has said that Saturday's largely failed bombardment would be the end of their response to the Israeli strike at its consulate in Syria. And so far, the Biden administration has been successful in preventing Israel from an immediate response against Iran. The U.S. had said it will not join in any such response. The situation nonetheless remains a tinderbox right now. We will keep our eyes on it, and I suspect we will have much more on all of those stories in the days ahead. But Monday, of course, was itself a huge news day because, well, of course, it was tax day. So I hope you all paid your taxes on time this year. Also, I hear there's a very big trial underway in downtown Manhattan as of Monday, so there is that too. As you may have heard word, the first ever criminal trial in U.S. history against a former president got underway in New York on Monday as Donald Trump is facing 34 felony indictments under state law in this indictment for crimes related to paying hundreds of thousands of dollars just before the 2016 election to try and withhold information about his alleged sexual affairs with both a porn star and a Playboy model. That following the release of the infamous Access Hollywood tape in which he bragged about assaulting women. It was, as Trump himself might describe it, had any Democratic candidate done anything close to the very same thing that Trump did, an act of election interference, a successful attempt to cheat in order to win the 2016 election. The unreported payment of some $130,000 to adult film actress Stephanie Clifford, who prefers to be known as Stormy Daniels, was a federal campaign violation, according to findings and fines by the FEC. Trump's alleged attempt to hide that payment to Stormy Daniels by having his then personal attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, personally take out a second mortgage on his home to cover the payments, and then to pay Cohen back through monthly payments while Donald Trump served as president, amounted to some 34 felony counts under New York state law, according to prosecutors, as Trump fraudulently mischaracterized the payments as retainer fees for Michael Cohen. But they weren't, charges Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. They were payoffs from the Oval Office itself to reimburse Cohen for the money that he gave to Daniels to keep her from discussing the affair she claims to have had with Trump while Trump's third wife, Melania, was nursing their newborn son. Normally, the charges for fraudulent business records of this sort, one for each check that was written, one for each fraudulent invoice that was created, and one for each false ledger recording the payments to Cohen. Normally, those would all be considered misdemeanors. But as the Manhattan DA alleges, they were all of them in furtherance of another crime. In this case, campaign finance violations committed with the unreported payment of $130,000 to Daniels to help Trump cheat to win the election. Those 34 misdemeanors, therefore, each get bumped up to 34 felony counts under New York state law because they were in furtherance of those other crimes. All of this would be bad and, of course, historic enough, but for the fact that Donald Trump, incredibly enough, is now the Republican Party's presumptive nominee for the 2024 presidential election anyway and is said to be running neck and neck, if you believe the polls, with the incumbent president, Joe Biden. Trump, of course, denies all of the charges against him. He has repeatedly been gagged by the trial court judge, which would be Justice Juan Merchan in New York's Supreme Court, which is actually two levels down from New York's highest court, which is known as the Court of Appeals. Justice Merchan has been forced to issue narrow gag orders against the former president after his repeated attacks in social media and during his political rallies against witnesses and the judge's family members, among others. During last-minute pretrial arguments before jury selection was to begin on Monday, prosecutors alleged Trump had violated that gag order by posting attacks against Michael Cohen and others. In fact, they say he violated it three times over the weekend. In response, Merchan instructed Trump that he may fine or jail him for such violations. Yes, he could send him to jail. He also ordered Trump to be present in court for all proceedings in this matter and said that he would instruct law enforcement officials to bring Trump back to court physically if he fails to show up. The judge also set a hearing for argument on April 24, that's next Wednesday, in response to prosecutors' allegations that Trump had violated the gag order multiple times, both over the weekend and even during Monday morning's oral arguments. Jury selection is now finally underway in the trial in New York City as the nation plays witness itself to the first ever criminal trial of a former president and the first of four such criminal trials that may occur in the months ahead, as Trump is also facing indictments for attempted election theft in Georgia and at the federal level, and charges related to stealing highly classified national documents upon leaving office and refusing to return them to the government in violation of the Federal Espionage Act. The New York case, however, may be the only one to actually get to trial and reach either a conviction or an acquittal, or perhaps a hung jury, by a jury prior to this year's November 5th election. If found guilty, Donald Trump could face as many as 4 years in prison for the crimes of which he is accused in New York State. So that's a lot. Joining us on this historic day to try and make sense legally, politically, and perhaps culturally of what we are now seeing play out in real time before our eyes each day in the New York case, likely over the next 6 weeks or more, are two longtime friends of this program. Keith Barber is a former attorney and former lifelong Republican who is now a frequent contributor on legal and constitutional matters at the Progressive Daily Coast website, where he is known simply as Keith DB. He joins us once again today from deep in the bowels of MAGA country in the Florida villages. Oh, Keith Barber, welcome back to the broadcast, counselor.
Yeah, thank you, Brad, from deep in the bowels.
Good. And she has been with us on this program for damn near every major historical moment in the Donald Trump pre-presidency, presidency, and endless post-presidency, from the day he came down that golden escalator at Trump Tower through presidential debates, two different impeachments, and more indictments and civil suits than we can even count at this point during his three runs for office. Heather Digby Parton is the Sidney Hillman Prize-winning columnist at Salon and at her much-beloved and long-running Hullabaloo blog, where she is known simply as Digby. Heather Parton, here we go again, and welcome back to the broadcast.
Well, thanks for having me from deep in my bowels as well.
Well, thank
you. Glad to be here.
Thank you for being had. All right, guys, I hope to not have to play too much of this guy's remarks, as they're generally filled with nothing but lies and nonsense, but just before he appeared on Monday for the first day of his criminal trial, the disgraced former president turned defendant, turned presidential candidate, spoke briefly to the cameras inside the courthouse before entering the courtroom.
This is an assault on America. Nothing like this has ever happened before. There's never been anything like it. Every legal scholar said this case is nonsense. It should never have been brought. It doesn't deserve anything like this. There is no case, and they've said it. People that don't necessarily follow or like Donald Trump said this is an outrage that this case was brought. This is political persecution. This is a persecution like never before. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And again, it's a case that should have never been brought. It's an assault on America. And that's why I'm very proud to be here. This is an assault on our country. And it's a country that's failing. It's a country that's run by an incompetent man who's very much involved in this case. This is really an attack on a political opponent. That's all it is. So I'm very honored to be here. Thank you very much.
That was Trump just moments before his criminal trial began. Heather Digby Parton, I'm sure you're one of those folks who is outraged about this trial happening at all. Your response to those remarks and your general expectations for this trial, how are you hoping it will play out and how are you expecting that it will?
Well, you know, first of all, I think, you know, it is a shocking, unprecedented moment to see an ex-president and current nominee for one of the major parties for president, whining like a five-year-old every 5 minutes about being politically persecuted because he committed the crime of, you know, paying hush money to an adult film actress, and in the process of doing that, violated state New York state law, mm-hmm. and as a result, and motivated at the time in order to you know, win an election, and what he keeps calling election interference is actually true. That's what this case is all about. So, I mean, my expectations for it, you know, I honestly have no idea. I mean, you know, I'm never good at this when it comes to trials. I mean, I, you know, was shocked by the OJ verdict. We just went through all that last week. So, you know, anything can happen. And so I don't know. But from what I read, and I'm sure Keith will have much more to say about this, that on a legal basis, it has a much stronger foundation than we were led to believe. And so there is at least a chance that this could lead to a conviction of Donald Trump. And that could have an effect on the election, because according to the polling, there is at least some portion of the electorate who might be inclined to vote for him, for whom a criminal conviction would change their mind. So
we'll see about that.
We'll have to see. We'll see about that too. But I'm just saying it could.
I've got some questions on that if we have time to get to them. Keith. The prosecution's star witness here, at least one of them, is said to be former Trump attorney and fixer Michael Cohen. He went to jail for federal charges related to this matter in a pleading guilty to conspiracy charges in an indictment that says Donald Trump himself directed that conspiracy. Cohen pleaded guilty to felony charges for, among other things, lying to Congress before eventually coming clean and testifying truthfully to Congress. How does his own history as a convicted felon and as Team Trump describes it, an admitted liar, affect his credibility as a witness in this case, as you see it, as a as an attorney, now former attorney?
Well, you know, if we had a two-tier system of justice, which is what Trump is whining about here, then what would occur is that Michael Cohen would go to jail, which he did, for participating in and doing the same thing that Trump did without Trump going to jail. Right. I mean, that would be two-tier justice if Trump did not face the same justice that Michael Cohen did for being his co-conspirator in all of this and really doing the same thing. Cohen falsified loan applications, essentially, to get the loan by which he paid off Stormy Daniels and was then later paid off by Trump. And kind of a funny thing, even though Cohen fully paid back that loan, nobody on Team Trump was there saying, well, there wasn't a victim.
And no crime.
You know,
right.
Because they
paid it all back.
Fraud.
Right.
And, you know, so this is an equalization of justice here. Bringing this case to trial is saying, look, you know, the guy that Cohen helped is also going to be held accountable for this. Both of them did it. So they're both going to be tried for it. And I think it's a triumph of justice that is happening.
But does it make it any more difficult, the fact that Cohen has pleaded guilty to lying to federal officials? Does that make it more difficult to have him as the witness here?
Sure it does. And Trump's attorneys will pounce on that. But let's talk about what Cohen lied about. Cohen lied to protect Trump.
Right.
That was the essence of his lie. His lie was to falsely tell the United States Congress that Trump had ended his business dealings with the Russians in 2016 when he started his campaign, when in fact, those business dealings carried on into the spring of 2017 after Trump was president of the United States. That was Cohen's lie.
Which makes it hard. You know, is that something that will come up if defense tries to call him a liar? Are they allowed to bring in the fact that, yes, he did lie, he admitted to it, he was lying to protect the defendant? Is that something that can come up in the trial?
Oh, absolutely. I think that would be, if not brought out in direct by the questions from the prosecutors of Cohen, it would certainly be brought out in redirect to rehabilitate the witness.
Heather, Cohen is sort of being billed as the star witness in some of the pretrial coverage I've seen. But if we're being honest here, isn't the star witness really Stormy Daniels? I mean, you know, thinking back to the O.J. Simpson trial, since you mentioned it, I mean, her appearance, what sort of thing do you expect she is going to have to testify to, Heather?
Well, from what we understand,
and this is a family show, so please be careful. Okay, proceed.
Well, I don't think she's going to be asked to testify about that.
Oh,
if you know what I mean?
Okay.
You know, who knows? But I kind of doubt it. Maybe she'll blurt something out. I don't know. But no, she's going to be asked to testify about the deal that was made. There are a bunch of people who are involved in that, including the person I think is going to be the star witness, a man by the name of, with the serendipitous name of David Pecker, who was the CEO of the parent company for the National Enquirer and a longtime ally and friend of Donald Trump. And he and Trump and Cohen cooked this thing up, this whole, you know, plot to called catch and release, where anybody who came forward with negative information.
Catch and kill.
Catch and kill. And would come forward with negative information about Trump, that they would offer them money to take the story and then never publish it. And then they'd have them sign an NDA so that they couldn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. That was the deal. And in fact, it was a deal that actually was fulfilled with a Playboy model by the name of Karen McDougal, who had an affair with Trump for, I don't know, almost a year. And it was, you know, I mean, it was a real affair, not a one night stand. And she had come forward with her story, and they actually did pay her $150,000. And I don't think most people realize this, but in 2021, Pecker was the subject of a complaint with the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, saying that the National Enquirer had unlawfully aided Trump in 2016. And the FEC found that Pecker and his company had violated election laws with these payments to Karen McDougal to bury this story. And he entered a non-prosecution agreement in which he admitted that the payment had been made in order to help Trump's campaign. Now, this judge, as far as we know, is going to allow Pecker and is going to allow Karen McDougal to testify in this case.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is trying to prove that this whole plot that they had worked up, this whole thing that Pecker, Trump, Cohen, and various other players in this had cooked this whole thing up in order to help Trump's campaign, which is kind of the crux of this matter, in order to raise these charges to a felony in the state of New York. So I think Pecker is really, really key. And apparently, from what I've been gathering, the Trump people are frantic to keep him off the stand, but they're not going to be able to. He's going to testify.
Keith, once again, that's all well and good. But as we know, it's going to be Stormy Daniels that will be the star witness but let me ask specifically about Stormy.
You may wish so, but I'd like to thank Heather.
Yeah.
Echoing what I would have said, that the witness whose name most people don't know, that's going to be really the star witness here, is David Pecker. And it's because he will testify that all of this was premeditated. It was planned in advance. This whole catch and kill scam was arranged in advance, and it's really going to undermine Trump's claim that his reason for this whole elaborate scheme was to hide it from Melania. And just goes out the window with Pecker's testimony.
And the affair with Karen McDougal that was said to go on for a year, that was during Melania's pregnancy. Allegedly, but the reason I'm going back to Stormy, and I'm not even sure if McDougal, if Trump is denying the McDougal affair or not, but I know he is denying the tryst with Daniels. And the reason I'm asking this is because if he's claiming that he doesn't even know her, or that they never even had an affair, there's a photo of them together, so he obviously knows her. But if he claims they never had an affair, doesn't that mean that she's going to have to offer some sort of testimony to prove that they had sex, and we're going to see this in this trial somehow?
Oh, I think that will be mentioned. They won't go into the salacious details of it.
Are you sure?
On CNN one night. But
You want this so badly, Brett.
No, I don't. No, I really don't. But I don't know how you avoid
how else
that.
Do you prove it?
Yeah, if he's saying it's a lie. Yeah.
I mean, they did it to Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
I understand that Stormy Daniels is directing now, so perhaps she'll do a movie that you can watch where all that will be featured.
Oh, I'm just trying to be legalistic here, not salacious, but I don't know how you avoid it. I'm serious.
I don't think you can. I think that she would have to testify, or I would expect her to testify that, yes, I had an affair with Trump. And then when I threatened to go, and she actually brought it to the attention of the National Enquirer first, you know, to David Pecker again, back to that name, when I went to try and sell the story, you know, the National Enquirer, David Pecker, contacted Cohen in order to kill the story. So I, you know, that's what you're going to hear her testify again. And so you're going to have Stormy Daniels and David Pecker corroborating each other as to, you know, how this happened.
You got, you know, you guys want to make fun of me for bringing up Stormy Daniels. I think you guys just want to keep saying Pecker over and over and over again. Keith, Trump himself claims that he will absolutely testify in this case. He's claimed as much before. Should he be believed? Will he testify in this thing, given what is at stake here?
Well, I have no idea, but from what I understand, every lawyer I've heard discuss this, and maybe Keith can fill in here. There's no way any lawyer would want him to testify, knowing what kind of a blabbermouth he is and the way he behaves on the stand and the way he did in his just recently in his fraud trial. It shows that he is very incontinent when it comes to, you know, being on the stand. Well, he's verbally incontinent.
I understand. Yes.
And you know, they would not want him to do that, but he claims that he wants to do it. Of course, he said that before for the Mueller investigation and what have you, but who knows? I mean, who knows? Maybe he will feel he needs to clear his name or, you know, some such nonsense, but I don't know. From what I understand, he's already falling asleep. So he may just forget and not just
Brad.
Yeah, go ahead.
Brad, I think, you know, one of my stories on the Daily Coast just recently done, in fact, last Friday was titled "Why Trump Would Be Crazy to Testify in His New York Criminal Trial." And it goes into basically evidence.
But he is crazy.
That's
the point. Yeah,
well,
go ahead.
That's true. But it goes into evidence that would otherwise not be admissible against Trump that would become admissible because he's testifying. And when you testify, your credibility, you put your credibility and tendency, if you will, for truthfulness at issue. And so evidence that can be used to impeach your truthfulness, your tendency to be truthful, can come in to be admitted that would not otherwise normally be admitted because it's not relevant and because it involves wrongs unrelated to this trial. But, for example, prior frauds by Trump, you know, that and the importance of it is you're not showing that it's consistent with his fraud this time around. You're using it to undermine the truthfulness of his testimony here. And if that sounds like a fine distinction, that's a fine distinction the rules of evidence draws. And so, for example, suddenly you could have Trump cross-examined about his Trump University frauds, his Trump Charitable Foundation fraud, his Trump organization fraud, where he was just found civilly liable for violating criminal statutes, just for the record. And, you know, maybe even all the election related fraud, you know, associated with fake electors and forged electoral college certificates and so forth. You could use, once again, not to show that he's a fraudulent kind of fella, but rather to show that he's a not honest person and that you can't make you can't give his testimony any credibility.
Well, I it seems to me that he's got to do something, because if you look at this actual case, it seems pretty straightforward, right? There's no real defense of the business documents here are pretty cut and dry. There's 34 business transactions that are documented on paper. I guess he can say this shouldn't be a crime or this wasn't a crime or something, but he can actually dispute what the allegations actually are here, as far as I can tell.
That would be difficult for him to do in a lot of ways. As you suggest, it's a documents case, much as the fraud case in Judge Engoron's court was mm-hmm. a documents case. Mm-hmm. And so you've got the documents there. I suspect that Trump's defense on that is kind of going to be an advice of counsel defense. So while I just left those kind of details to Michael Cohen and other people in the organization, I didn't do it myself. I think, though, that you're going to have testimony from people like Weisselberg and others are going to say, yeah, he knew it. And Cohen, that's one of the things Cohen's going to testify about is, mm-hmm. yeah, he knew what was going on.
Heather, so, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that's just where that's going to go. That's the way that's going to go. And, you know, it's up to the jury to decide who they believe in what. But I think that it would be flat out insanity to have Trump testify.
I got to get to a quick break here. But Heather, long time, theoretically very loyal personal Trump aide, Hope Hicks, and I think she was his aide prior to going to the White House. And then while he all 4 years or much of those 4 years while he was in the White House, she is set to be called to testify by the prosecution. Is she actually going to testify against Trump here? We have not heard much about her in recent months and even years. What do you expect from the Hope Hicks testimony?
Well, I'm not entirely sure, but from what I understand, she was involved in some of the back and forth that was going on how to do these payments. And I have also read that she and a whole bunch of other people in the campaign, by the way, were aware that all this stuff was going on, that there was a porn star out there and that she was getting ready to you know, go public. And, you know, there was, of course, an article in the Wall Street Journal before the election about Karen McDougal. So there was an awareness that this stuff was going on, and it was all happening around the Access Hollywood tape revelation. Mm-hmm. So she has some information there. I don't know that she or even Trump would consider it to be, you know, any kind of, you know, her testifying against him necessarily. But I think it fills in some of the gaps on this timeline that they're trying to put forth about how they were really ramping up here with Stormy Daniels coming in just right at the end where the Access Hollywood tape was coming out, and how that applies to them, to their quote election mm-hmm. interference, which is what I think she has to say about that.
I think he actually will be furious with her if she doesn't lie. I mean, you're supposed to lie to protect him. And if she actually goes out and tells the truth, well, I think he's going to be even crazier than Keith's story from Friday at Daily Coast suggests he might be. Let me take a quick break here. We'll come back with Keith Barber of Daily Coast, Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Hullabaloo. On the first day, day one of, well, it could be, I don't know how many days it's going to be. It could run for 6 weeks or more. We'll see. Day one of the first criminal trial of a former president and perhaps future president of the United States. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the Bradcast. Hey, it's Brad. Well, we are here in another critical presidential election year. We cover elections like no other outlet in the nation. This election year will be a big one like none other. It could even be the last one, depending on how it goes. Seriously. Please help the Bradcast continue in this critical election year. Support our work right now with a generous donation via bradblog.com/donate. Help keep the Bradcast and bradblog.com free for all. We couldn't do any of this without you. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate right now. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Oh, Stormy. Oh, Stormy. Bring back that sun in your head.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with our special guest today in our special coverage, Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Hullabaloo, Keith Barber of Daily Kos. Okay, guys, Keith Barber, 6,000 jurors have been reportedly called to court in New York this week before this first criminal trial of a former president in New York City. 6,000? 1,500 of whom were called on Monday alone. Is that anything close to normal as a former prosecutor yourself, former attorney? Is that anything close to normal? And how will that affect the length of this entire process?
That's not even close to normal. That's just crazy. I've never heard of anything like that. I wonder what the world record is for jurors called in a case.
It
makes me wonder.
Yeah, I mean, 1,500 on one day alone. Now, we were talking over the break prior to the break, we were talking about, you know, witnesses and the possibility of lying on the stand, Hope Hicks, et cetera. But fortuitously, you mentioned there was the Trump chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg, that just was sent back to prison for doing exactly that in Trump's civil fraud case just a few months ago. Is that something that will probably be echoing for witnesses like Hope Hicks?
I think that was a wonderful signal to send every witness that's going to testify at this trial. You know, perjury is real and it puts people in jail, you know, and Weisselberg is now sitting in jail for committing perjury to deny, you know, fraud that Trump says never happened. So I mean, it's a wonderful message. I think that Hope Hicks and everybody else that will be, you know, sitting on that witness stand and raising their hand on the Bible will have heard that message real loud and clear, at least I hope so.
Heather, Trump recently claimed that it would be, quote, an honor for him to go to jail for violating the gag order. Well, we may find that out soon enough. There is the judge on Monday set a hearing date for next Wednesday. Generally, the trial is supposed to not happen, going to happen every day of the week except for Wednesdays. Now there will be a hearing on whether he violated the gag order, and the prosecutors want to fine him at least $3,000. But if he continues to do this, the judge has said he could, in fact, send him to jail. He said this a number of times, including on Monday. So, A, do you believe Trump when he says it would be quite an honor for him to go to jail? And B, do you think we'll get to find out?
Well, A, you know, of course, it's, you know, Trump's been out there comparing himself to Jesus Christ and Nelson Mandela. So I'm not surprised that he's saying that, you know, of course, it'd be an honor to go to jail. I mean, it's so absurd. Of course, he does not want to go to jail. And I don't really think he believes he will. And frankly, I don't believe he will either. I think it's highly unlikely that he'll be sent to jail. I mean, I think he'd have to do something, you know, way more egregious than tweeting out some insults about somebody. Now, if something happened to a witness that he was tweeting out, or he was more directly threatening them, I could see maybe they'd have no choice but to try and do something to keep him, you know, from doing anything like that again. But as far as the rest of the witnesses that are on there, I would think that they are very intimidated by the idea of going to jail. After all, remember, this is a state case, and even if Donald Trump manages to win next November, there's nothing he can do for them.
Right.
If they get accused of perjury and are convicted, they are in big trouble. And to David Pecker again, you know, just so I can say his name.
Yes,
one more
we know.
You know how I am.
I do.
But I did want to, you know, just sort of point out that agreement that he had with the FEC, I don't know what kind of conditions were on that or whether that has any legal bearing. But, you know, Pecker has testified before the grand jury. He has been cooperating with prosecutors. So it's hard to say what kind of agreements he has. Weisselberg had an agreement with prosecutors in the previous Trump Organization case, which I believe is why he was sent back to prison, because he had violated that agreement. by committing perjury in the other Trump Organization case. And so, you know, I think that, you know, this could be a real problem for Trump if there's some kind of, you know, discrepancy between what he expects these people to be saying and what they say. And there are some real intimates of him. His private secretary is going to be testifying. I don't think Weisselberg is going to testify, though. From what I understand, he's left off the list. And I think maybe they just realize that he'll just lie and it's kind of pointless. So they're not going to, you know, he'll stay in jail for the rest of his life. He doesn't care, you know.
Keith, in reality here, you know, setting aside what the witnesses may or may not do, in fact, Trump doesn't actually need an acquittal, right? If a single one of the 12 jurors refuses to convict, that becomes a hung jury. And then what? A second trial? We do all of this all over again?
Well, it would be up to the prosecution. But yeah, you know, it would take a while to get there. The trial would obviously have to end. It would go to jury. You know, at some point, the jury would say that it looks like it's a hung jury, and the judge would probably tell them, you know, no, deliberate longer, go back into the room and see if you can work it out. And at some point, the foreman of the jury would probably communicate to the judge, you know, look, Your Honor, we've got one guy holding out or whatever, and we are not going to be able to reach a verdict. And the judge would be compelled to declare a mistrial, which means the whole thing's a nullity. And the prosecution could start all over again with a fresh trial, you know, another 6,000 jurors to bring in and start what we're seeing today, go all over again. But that would be weeks and months down the road. It would be well into next year if that happened.
But I'm just sort of trying to set expectations as we look forward here. That would require just one juror to hold out, underscoring the importance of the jury selection and underscoring why it may, the expectations right now are that it's going to go on for 2 weeks or so. I mean, if they have 6,000 jurors, they're not going to go through all 6,000, right? They just need to find 12 that they can basically agree on?
They need to find around 12 or 16. There'll be some alternate jurors as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, once they get up to 12 jurors and then a few more as alternates, they'll cut it off.
I gotcha.
And they'll say the rest of you can go home.
Gotcha. Heather, Trump sent out a fundraising email on Friday arguing, quote, 72 hours until all hell breaks loose. Now, I saw no hell breaking loose today in New York City. Did I miss something? And would you expect to see any of the sort of, you know, will be wild hell to break loose that Trump doesn't seem to be warning about, actually, but he actually seems to be hoping for and asking for?
Well, I think so. I mean, it seems to me like that was a, you know, will be wild sort of message coming from him, and it didn't turn out to be wild at all. There were protesters on both sides outside the courtroom, but not very many. You know, there wasn't like a huge crowd or anything like that. I have no idea. It doesn't appear at any of his, I mean, we've seen a lot of these now, right? I mean, there are four different jurisdictions that have been trying him, and we've not seen any kind of massive demonstration by the Trumpers. On the other hand, it's possible, in my view, that if there is a, you know, a guilty verdict in a criminal case, that you might see some, you know, kind of outbreak of violence, or at the very least, some kind of more mass protest. But who knows? I mean, so far it hasn't happened, and he obviously would like to see more protesters out there. But so far they haven't really been materializing. It's almost as if this is just sort of a fun thing. It's like a rally or something,
or
you know,
reality and people show.
People aren't really seeing it as a really, you know, threatening thing in any way. So, I mean, who knows?
Yeah. And of course, a lot of the most violent sorts are already in jail from the last time they answered one of this jerk's calls. Keith, Barber, how much do we need to be concerned about publicity, news coverage of this trial affecting the jurors? I mean, don't they need to be sequestered to keep that from happening? This is going to be everywhere, this trial.
Well, yeah, it is going to be hard to avoid, but you'd be surprised, you know, how many people are not the news junkies that you and I are. Okay. I mean, I think that everybody on this call here is pretty obsessed with news and following it closely. But a lot of these people that will be eventually accepted to be on the jury just aren't. And will it be tempting for them to, you know, tune in the news to see what is being said about them?
Yeah.
Well, sure. But that's true in any high profile trial. And, you know, the best you can do is you're going to have the judge firmly admonish them that, you know, they're not to be watching the news related to this. And, you know, you promised you wouldn't, you know, that's on the, you know, that every juror is going to have to swear before they're one of the chosen ones that they will not do so, you know, under oath.
What kind of case? I mean, if not a case like this, what kind of case would require sequestering the jurors, if not this type of a case?
Yeah. Well, and you could argue that it could be sequestered, but at least so far, the judge has taken the lesser option of preserving an anonymous jury. And, you know, in theory, nobody knows who they are. And so they can't be influenced because nobody knows who they are. And if they don't tell anybody, which they will be told not to tell anybody, then nobody will know they're on the jury to influence them. Right? And the concern that they may choose to watch TV or tune into the broadcast is obviously one that's a possibility. Though I just saw a note, and apparently I think you should regard this as bad news. I'm continuing to follow along what's going on in the voir dire, and apparently nobody on the prospective panel that's there so far has admitted to ever listening to any podcast ever. So there you go.
Really? Yeah. Normally I would want anyone to listen to the broadcast. In this case, if you are a juror in the Donald Trump case, please turn your podcast off now. Do not listen to the broadcast. Heather, it's kind of extraordinary that, you mentioned this, I think, at the top of the show, that O.J. Simpson happened to die last week of all days at age 76, reportedly from prostate cancer. His criminal trial and the murder case of his wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ron Goldman, was arguably the last trial of the century. Of course, that was a different century. So how does the media circus of that case 30 years ago sort of help inform what we are likely to see in this case or in these cases, I guess, against Trump, if at all, given that, you know, this one in New York, at least, will not have cameras in the courtroom as the OJ case did?
Well, I think that's the big difference. You know, I mean, I think that that's the big difference. Although we've since come to, you know, see cameras in the courtroom as a pretty normal occurrence. So maybe people would react differently. And of course, this isn't a murder trial, which is always more, you know, kind of there's a greater urgency about something like that than there is for something like this. Although I would argue that this may be even, you know, much more important considering it's Donald Trump and he's running for president again. But, you know, nonetheless, I don't know that, you know, whenever you have something like this, I mean, I know that just a year or so ago, everybody across the country was watching, a defamation trial between Amber Heard, who nobody had ever heard of,
right,
and Johnny Depp, you know, like it was the most important thing in the world. So, you know, there's inherent drama in this stuff.
But that was broadcast, right? They were able to watch that footage.
Yeah, you could watch it. And you won't be able to watch this. And I can just tell you from observing what I've seen this morning, what the media is planning to do, and I don't know if they're going to do this every day or not, but they're doing wall-to-wall people running out from the courtroom and talking about what they just saw.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how dramatic that really is. I mean, I find following it on social media to be a better way of sort of following events. On the other hand, social media is so screwed up now that it's really hard to know whether you're reading anything that's real or whether or not it's some kind of bot. But, you know, at the end of the day, I just think, you know, it's just going to happen. I have to wonder, maybe Keith knows this better than I do. When you have a high profile case like this, I mean, I would think that most people have an opinion of Trump one way or the other, but I'm not sure any of them really know the details of this case. I mean, I know people who have been following it very closely, including myself, who I had to go back and sort of remind myself of what this case was about. So it may be that there's less of a problem with people coming in, you know, and not being sequestered and what have you, because they'll be, you know, seeing witnesses and there's a bunch of documents. And, you know, it may be more like a normal trial than we think.
I will say, by the way, I just want to toss this in, that that is an indictment of the media, to be frank, that the people that, you know, have been downplaying this, oh, the New York case is the less serious one.
Agreed.
He cheated to steal a presidential election, and he was successful in that, allegedly. And that's what
And by the way, it wasn't the only thing he did. There was a whole Mueller investigation. I mean, Donald Trump Jr. was meeting with Russian agents in Trump Tower. I mean, there were a lot of things that they did to cheat. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's not forget that. I mean, he may not have, you know, technically committed a federal crime when he did it, but we know what he did. And we know that this is part and parcel of the way that he went about running for president
which is why every time he says this is election interference, that's what he does.
Yep.
It's the old I'm rubber, you're glue defense
exactly.
In all of these matters. We got to get out here shortly, guys, but Keith, Trump is registered to vote in your own state of Florida, and he would be disenfranchised there if he was convicted of any of the felony indictments that he's facing. There may be much irony in the fact that he can't vote for president this year if that happens, if he's convicted, but he can become president if he is convicted, which is kind of mind-blowing right there. And it may seem absurd because it is, but it's absurd. Is it absurd that he can still be president if convicted, or is it absurd that he would lose his right to vote if convicted? I think the answer may be both, but I'm more troubled, frankly, by the notion that one who is convicted of a felony loses their right to vote, to be honest.
Well, I'm okay with, you know, someone who's been convicted losing their right to vote while they're serving their time, essentially. So I don't have as much a problem with that, though. I believe that once an individual has served their time, that they should get their franchise back. But yes, Donald Trump could be in the position of being the first president of the United States who was unable to vote for himself. And you know, it's part of the theater of the absurd that is any election involving Donald Trump and what we're living through now. I mean, for Pete's sakes, I would have thought in the America that I was raised in, that if a man had been found by a jury to have raped a woman, that there would be, you know, that his political career would be over, never mind that he could be a credible candidate for the presidency of the United States. But here we are.
Yeah, here we are indeed. And it all of it mind-blowing, to be frank. Heather, earlier you said you doubt he's going to go to jail. I think you were referring to, at the time, to for violating the gag order. But I'll just get quick thoughts from both of you on this. Do you think, if he is convicted, that he might actually be, A, sentenced to prison, and B, may actually go to prison?
You know, I have no idea. I still believe, I kind of doubt that this case is going to send him to jail, or even if he did get sentenced to to incarceration, I have to assume they do house arrest or something for him. I mean, it just seems unlikely to me, but what do I know? I mean, maybe we'll see how this trial unfolds and maybe that will happen. Well, it certainly won't happen before the election because there'll be appeals and he'll be out on bond, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But can I just say one thing before we go that I really hope that we have to get out there? Donald Trump fell asleep today during court.
Did he? Did he really?
Yes. And Maggie Haberman reported it. I mean, this isn't like, you know, I mean, he fell asleep. All the reporters that were in there noticed it. So, you know, Sleepy Don, or I guess
Sleepy Don,
him Drowsy Don, or whatever,
you know.
Drowsy Don, you know, kind of having a little trouble keeping his eyes open. Imagine, this is 6 weeks of this, and it's going to be boring. And I don't know, what are they going to have to give him to keep him awake? Because this is not going to be easy. And he has to be there every single minute. So,
especially,
not a good start. And that's going to be the headline, is that Trump fell asleep during court.
And I hear there's a nationwide shortage.
Haberman,
Yeah, there's a nationwide shortage of Adderall, I understand, as well. So yeah, that really may be a problem. But I'm sorry, Keith, you were saying? Yes?
Apparently on his way out from a break, he gave Haberman the evil eye. And he stared her down as a result of this. And as Heather suggests, it's the first day. It's the first
day.
Day one.
By the way, I need to correct an error of one of our guests here. The socialist presidential candidate in 1920, Eugene V. Debs, was in prison during the election, was also probably not able to vote for himself from the federal penitentiary in Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow. Okay.
Hate to correct
you.
Yeah.
We stand corrected.
You're welcome.
Eugene Debs.
I know as a former Republican, you probably were not following the plight of the Socialist Party back in 1920, but there you go.
Indeed.
All right.
Before we go, I just want to remind everybody that in this case, the payments were intended to hide details from voters before the election that Trump violated campaign finance law. It's really important for people to remember this is an election interference case.
And an actual crime, unlike what we played Donald Trump saying at the top of the show, which is my gift to him that I hope to not repeat. Anyway, hey, thank you guys very much. We may be leaning on each of you pretty hard over the next few weeks, probably next few months. I hope you don't mind. Thank you so much for your willingness to join us here. Heather Digby Parton is, of course, the beloved blogger known as Digby over at the Hullabaloo site, which is digbysblog.net. And, of course, her regular column at salon.com. You can also follow her on the Twitters at Digby56. And there's Keith Barber, who you can follow on the Twitters, I believe, at KeithDB80. And you can follow his work over at Daily Coast, where he blogs, writes as simply KeithDB. Hey, thanks to both of you guys. And like I say, I bet we'll be talking again soon.
Yes. Thank you very much, Brad.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Whether you like it or not. Thanks, guys. Okay, we have got to get out.
Yes.
My thanks to both Digby and Keith, of course, and to our producer, Desi Doyen.
Yes.
And to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other that we've ever done, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. There is no paywall there, so have at it. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.